Okay. Today is Sunday, the 22nd of August, 2021. And this is the study portion of our sacrament meeting. We are studying the sealed book. And we are in the book of the Acts of the Three Nephites. And today we start on chapter 4. And just as a review of where we were, it's been talking about how the Nephites were among the three disciples that have been translated, the three Nephites, were among their own people for something like 100 years, and then left for about 100 years, and some people thought they had died. And then the people started to get proud again, and they were, and by the way, in those 100 years, they were ministering all around the world or doing other places. And then around 200 years, the people started getting proud again and breaking into classes, and then they were called back. So that's the context that we're in. So who would, I'll call on Lisa to, if you've got that, Lisa, would you read verse 1 for us of chapter 4, and we'll comment on it.
Yes. And it came to pass, when we returned among those who are of our people, because they began to be proud, that we ministered among them until the days when Amaron, the brother of Amos, which were the sons of Amos, my brother, yea, the one who replaced my father Nephi among the 12 disciples, when he took the leadership of the church among the Nephites.
Okay, so he's doing his own introduction here, much like mine, saying it since when they came back. Well, first I'll ask you, comments from you on this. Do you remember who's... Well, he already tells you. Any comments on this at all, please?
Well, I guess I'm a little bit lost. The sons of Amos, my brother, or Amaron, the brother of Amos, the sons of Amos. So we're down two or three generations from Nephi.
Yes, and a lot of these lived a long time. So he's saying his father was Nephi, and that's the last of the Nephites. There, remember, there's Helaman, and then his son Helaman, and then there's Nephi, the one who the story of him ends at the end of the book of Helaman. And then there's his son Helaman, who is the one that's in the book of Third Nephi. I mean, his son Nephi. So it's Helaman, Helaman, Nephi, Nephi. And so that Nephi is the one who was the head of the disciples. He was the main disciple. He was there when Christ came. Then his son, he had several sons, but one of his sons took his place. Amos was the son who took his place and became the head of the 12 disciples. And another of his sons was Jonah, who is writing this book, who became one of the three Nephites. So he says, he's talking about the sons of Amos, my brother, the one who replaced my father Nephi when he took the leadership of the church. Oh, yes. Yeah, I never noticed that. That's interesting. They never did have a, quote, first presidency. I've always emphasized how they didn't have apostles. They didn't have a first presidency either. They had 12 disciples, and the lead disciple was the head of the church. I can't believe I've never noticed that before. And so that's who Amos was, but now he's talking about...
Amos has a son named Amos who has a brother Amaron. So Amaron's the grandson of Nephi.
Right. And Amos had at least two sons. Amos had two sons, one called Amos and one called Amram. And Amram, as I recall, now I should have looked this up as I prepared, but I'm just remembering that Amram is mentioned in the Book of Mormon as toward the end of, well, it fits right into this period. And yes, he's a grandson of Nephi, the last Nephi. And when they're all living to be, the righteous tend to live to nearly 100 years, that would cover the, he'd probably be old by the end of a couple of hundred years, but he was still in his days. So anyway, that it mainly this just gives us the time period. So I think we can, other comments before we just read verse 2, which goes into what's actually happening.
I just want to make a comment about the word, the name Amram. It's not mentioned in 3rd Nephi. It's the last is in Helaman. It's referring to the Lamanites. So I don't think this particular Amram's mentioned in the Book of Mormon.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Well, you're right, because after the people go wicked, he doesn't give the names. Thank you. You're right. I was not remembering that correctly. And there's a lot of similar names: Ammon, Amoron, Mormon. Anyway, thank you. Okay, Russell, would you read verse 2 for us?
And among them we remain until the days when Amram hid the records that were sacred, 320 years after the coming of Christ among the Nephites. It was then, in this year, that the Lord removed us again from the midst of this people and led us to a distant land to minister among the Jews and the proselytes, Gentiles. 5 years after we were away again from this people, the Lord appeared to Mormon when he was 15 years old for the purpose of to prepare to obtain these sacred records of the people of Nephi entrusted out to him by his name, by this same Amram of whom I spoke earlier.
Okay, so I think I'm going to go back to what I said. Amram is the one in the Book of Mormon. If you go into, it's not going to be in 3rd and 4th Nephi. It's going to be up in the Book of the Book of Mormon, within the Book of Mormon.
I know. I searched the whole book for Amram and the last one was in Helamot. I'll look again. There must be a different spelling.
Okay, then find the name of who if you want to do the search. In the beginning
okay.
of the Book of Mormon.
It's spelled differently. It has only one M. The Amoron in Moroni 9:7 talks about from according to the knowledge which I'd received from Amram, behold the Lamanites of many prisoners anyway.
Okay, because I was going to say, I remember that was the name. Amram, I so there's the spelling. So that could be just a typo, and I don't know if it's still time. Oh, another announcement, which I'll put in this section. But an announcement is that finally the new English copies of the sealed book will be available for conference, and anybody that goes can pick up copies and take them back if they want. So that might still be a correction, but I do remember that Amram is the name of the last one to have the records, who hid them up, and they were hidden for quite a few years. And remember, he goes and talks to this very young boy named Mormon, who he said is a very sober child. Okay, well, let me let other people comment, but that, thank you, that's cleared that up. Because you could tell in verse 1, he's expecting us to recognize the name of Amram from the Book of Mormon. Now we see who he is. He's the son of Amos, who's the son of Nephi. So there's quite a bit here. Please, comments on verse 2. Says the Lord removed us again from the midst of this people. I'm just sort of while you're thinking, I'm just going to sort of hit the highlights and say them again. So he's saying that they stayed among them after they came for 100 years. They stayed another for a while after the people. It was about when they were 200 years later when the people were going bad, and he stays there. They stay there and try to help as much as they can until the time of Amram hiding the plates. And now he's going to say what happens to them, that they're taken out of the midst of these people, led to a distant land, and ministering among both Jews and proselyte Gentiles. And now he gives us the years. And 5 years after that, the Lord appeared to Mormon when he was 15. That's in the Book of Mormon, I believe. Is the Lord's appearance to him in the Book of Mormon? Maybe not.
Yeah, the Lord appears, but Amram doesn't appear.
Right. But the Lord appears.
What I mean is, Mormon doesn't mention Amram. He only mentions the Lord appearing to him.
Right. Well, I don't think Amram does appear. This is saying that the Lord appeared to Mormon when he was 15 for the purpose to prepare to obtain these sacred records entrusted to him by the same Amram of whom I spoke. Maybe there's not so much there to comment on, but it does fill in. We're getting the rest of the story, folks, of what happens to them when they're not among the Nephites. It's when you read when you read the Book of Mormon, it sounds like the three Nephites are there all the whole time, and they're not. Russell, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I was just going to read from Mormon 1:15. And I being 15 years of age and somewhat so of a sober mind, therefore I was visited of the Lord and tasted anew of the goodness of Jesus. Excellent. So yeah, we have that part there.
Thank you.
Can you explain what the proselyte Gentiles or Gentile proselytes is? I mean, I understand Jews, but what are Gentile proselytes?
Oh, so the Gentiles are everybody else, not the Jews. And the proselyte means that they've been they're accepting Christ instead of being pagan, that they're accepting the LDS. No, it does not mean that. They're accepting Christianity. They're accepting Christ. So I think it's proselyte is sort of like converted Gentiles.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, proselytes means people that are being taught. See, Mauricio's doing okay with these words for somebody that no speaky English. We're having to look up some of them.
Okay, I found the mistake. It's the Amram is there in Mormon, but it's spelled A-M-M-A-R-O-N. And so Mormon 2:17, and now the city of Jashan was near the land where Amram had deposited the records unto the Lord, that they might not be destroyed. And behold, I had gone according to the word of Amram and taken the plates of Nephi, did make a record according to the words of Amram. So,
well, is it spelled two different ways in the Book of Mormon itself, once with an A and once with an O?
Well, there is another Amram, but I don't think that's the same one, the one I was mentioning earlier.
Oh, okay.
There's one with a single M, O-R-O-N, and that one's in the Lamanites.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But the ones, so it's with an A then. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah.
Because we need to understand. Okay. And there's something before he was 15. The Lord appeared when he's 15, but wasn't he? It was either 9 or 10 when Amram first, I think, went to him. And he's very young. When 15 is about when he's an army general.
Yeah.
So, Russell, what is the spelling for the Amram in the Book of Mormon?
A-M-M-A-R-O-N.
It's A-R-O-N instead of O-R-O-N. Okay.
Yeah, John, I think you're right. And Russell, thank you for bird dogging that, but that Amaron did appear to Mormon when he was about 10 years of age.
Yeah, 10 years of age.
That's what I remember.
Appear just means he visited. I mean, they're both men, they're both alive. He was visited, Amaron went to visit him and recognized he was a sober youth. Isn't that it?
Yeah.
Right.
Sober child and quick to observe.
You're right, a sober child, quick to comprehend. Okay, well, we don't need to belabor this too much. Any other? Notice he doesn't say where. He says, went to a distant land to minister among the Jews and proselytes of Gentiles. Jews were spread all over. They weren't just all in Jerusalem. It's not spread over like after the AD 70, the Zipporahs, the dispersion, where they're driven out of Jerusalem. But there were Jews in Antioch, which is on border of Syria. There's another Antioch. Well, just think of where Paul went. Paul goes around to all these places in Europe, all through Turkey and farther. And remember, he goes to the synagogues first, where there's Jews. And then he goes to the Gentiles. So the Jews are all around. So when he says, they ministered among the Jews and the proselyte Gentiles, that's more likely in Europe somewhere. In fact, it's going to talk about Paul in the next verse, I think. So I guess we can go on. We're going to get the inside scoop on Paul here. The rest of the story that the Bible gives hints about. And now we're going to find out what the Lord told these disciples about Paul and how he doesn't use that name, but it's clear that's who he's talking about. So let's go on and read that. So Bill, could you read verse 3 for us?
After some time being ministering among the Jews and Gentile proselytes, both in Jerusalem and in all parts of Asia, we were caught up from place and reallocated again among the Nephite people, It was when we ministered among our brethren again, and in the course of these days, I began to write this record that we were required to do, and the other two disciples who have accompanied me since then, let me write our acts among the people of Christ, that we should go out on the face of the earth, ministering among all people, yea, among the Gentiles and also among the Jews, by virtue of the convincing power of God, who is with us.
Okay, comments, please.
Well, I think this really brings it out clearer as to how they traveled. They just plain disappeared from one place and appeared in another place.
They were reallocated.
Yeah. The transporter beam worked.
Yes. Scotty beamed them down where they needed to go or whatever. Yes. That can still happen today, by the way, if you're not translated. Faith is the key to everything. Wait, I this is recorded, but I'm going to throw a story in here that I believe is true. There was somebody in India that the Lord had commanded to go visit somebody in Europe. And he had no money. What? You know, it's like, how am I going to do that? And it was a pastor, and he had a special message from an angel to deliver to somebody in Europe. And the Lord, he was told by the Spirit to go to the airport. Just go to the airport and trust him. So the guy goes to the airport, no ticket, no nothing. He had his luggage, he had a bag. And then the Lord tells him, go into the restroom, the men's room, and go into a toilet area and close the door. So So he does that thinking this is getting stranger, you know, curiouser and curiouser, to quote Lewis Carroll. And then the Lord says, praise me, just praise me for until I tell you to stop. So he starts praising God, his hands up. You got a picture of this in the bathroom, in the men's room, in the airport. And then the Lord says, okay, that's good. Thank you. You're done. The man says, what? He picks up his luggage and walks out. And he's in the airport where he's going in Europe. And he delivers his message. I don't know how he got home, but that's how he got there. So we're talking about having faith in doing the crazy things the Lord might command us. All things are possible to God, and he might tell you kind of strange things to do. But look at the fun in that. Look at the surprise. This is better than the Lord loves to not only test people, but to give them these amazing surprises where they, do you see the fun in that from the Lord's side? Anyway, I shared that story. So yes, they're
reincarnated.
So what else do we learn here? It says all parts of Asia. So there you go. That's what we had kind of concluded. He goes to Jerusalem and all parts of Asia.
It's the seven churches, right?
Yes, there's at least those seven churches.
Right.
But Paul started other ones too.
But this is not Paul. This is them.
Well, we're going to get to Paul in a minute. It wasn't this verse. I was ahead of myself. Yeah, this is them. Yeah, Paul's taking ships that get crashed.
Yeah, Paul's in the next chapter.
I cheated. I read ahead. Sorry. I couldn't stop. Okay, thank you. I'm glad somebody else read ahead too and knew about that. John, okay, so he's going to Asia. Go ahead, other comments.
John, do we have another confirmation of this ability to transport in the story of Jesus reaching the disciples on the Sea of Galilee, and then the ship just arrives at the other shore?
I have trouble. You're the only one I have trouble hearing. Do we have confirmation? Just say that last part again. The confirmation of the what travel?
I was trying to think where that story is, where Jesus walks on the water. He comes to the boat with the fishermen, and when he enters the boat, the ship arrives at their destination.
I don't understand what your question is.
The question is whether the ship was translated and immediately arrived at the coast.
Sea of Galilee is not, I've never thought of that question before. I've never had any hint that the ship did anything differently. When it says immediately, that might mean different things. You might be reading too much into the word immediately, but as other people notice that, I don't have a good answer to that. I haven't even noticed the question before. He walked on the water. They were going on a ship across. He walked. The crowd was over on the other side expecting him at a certain time. I don't see any other hint in the story. Is there any other evidence in the story that anything went supernaturally fast? So my short answer is I don't know, but I don't think so. But I haven't thought about it. Anyway, we learned something here. When did he begin to write this record, this book in our hand, of the Acts of the Three Nephites? When was that written? It says, it was when we ministered again among our brethren. In the course of these days, I began to write this record. I think we learned that before. And we learned We learned that he gave this record to Mormon to copy into the plates. Isn't that correct, what we learned? And the other two disciples who accompanied me. Now there's a dash there, which usually means that something's been omitted. And then he says that we should go out on the face of the earth ministering among all people. Well, on the one hand, he wrote this book after he wrote this verse, right? So this verse is included in his book. So maybe he started it and then left. I'm not sure what that means. He started it before. Oh, this is when they left for that 100 years. This is when he left. This is telling us what he did for the 100 years after he left the people of Nephi and before he comes back and delivers this book to Amram. That's what he's saying. They were among the people of Nephi. Tell me if you think I'm right on this. I'm just understanding it as I read. But for around 100 years, the three disciples stayed among the Nephites. And he hadn't even thought about writing this book. Then they're called away because everything's going fine. And see, this would be about the year 100. And Paul teaches up to, that's interesting. Paul is killed about in the year AD 65, I think. So we'll have to double check those kinds of things. But anyway, they're called away and they're going to Europe and Jerusalem, the Jews and all through Asia, and they're teaching people. And it's at that time they start writing this book. And then, as it says in the book, after they start writing it, then they go back to the people around AD 200 when they're starting to get proud and divide into classes. And then he's going to finish this book and deliver it into the hands of Mormon and Moroni to include in the plates. Does that sound like I've got it pretty close?
Well, and we don't have to worry about Paul. The next verse, the next chapter talks about it. It's 14 years after they were translated that they went to Paul. So it was before Paul died in 65 that we don't have to worry about
Oh, right. I got Paul on my mind. I got excited about that. Thank you. So the next verse, so it's only 14. See, and so they're translated about AD 34. 14 years is, well, we'll get to that next chapter. Tune in next week. Or maybe even we'll start even today, depending how this goes. Okay, well, anyway, so he's giving us the details of where they went and when he started writing the book. And again, I'll just say, if you're faking a book, it's really good to put in a lot of generalities. Don't put in a lot of details about how many years between this and that, because it's too hard to remember everything and it's too easy to expose errors. Fake books tend to be very general, so nobody can pin them down. Anyway, it's not a fake book. Other comments on this verse? He says, I began to write this record that we were required to do. So this is not just his idea. This is the Lord commanding them to do. And they'll be commanded to have it included in the sealed plates. All righty, I think maybe we can go on. Bill read that. Steve, now my pictures are jumping around, so I might lose the order. But Steve, have you read yet? Can you read us verse 4?
I'll be glad to. In the course of these years, when we, the three disciples, remained among our own people again, behold, we ministered to Mormon, his son Moroni, for the benefit of the records entrusted to him to compile on plates, for how much these records, which I, Jonah, one of the three disciples of the Lord, was commissioned to do, which bears the name Acts of the Three Nephites, and also of a second record, which my father Nephi wrote by request of the Lord as being the book of the prophecies of Samuel the Lamanite. And also the record I mentioned earlier on the revelations of John, written by me, Jonah, with eight of the other two disciples, concerning what we had seen and heard when we were caught up.
Thank you. Okay, comments.
So these are three records, or these are indications of at least two records that we don't have yet in the sealed record.
Right.
The prophecies of Samuel the Lamanite and the revelations of John.
Amen. And have we been promised that they are, or told that they are in the next 23 plates that Mauricio is going to translate? Yes, way back at the first in the Words of Mormon, he tells us what's in the other plates, kind of an incentive. And he says, when you're able to obey what's in the first part, if you're good, well, you'll get to know the second part. And he specifically mentions both of those books. So now he's just giving, and that's pretty exciting. I mean, the prophecies of Samuel the Lamanite, look at, I mean, that's going to be wonderful. And by the way, for those, some of the other ones in this group are reading some other records that claim they include stuff about Samuel, they'll be able to double check and see if there's two witnesses or not, or what's going on there. But the revelations of John, remember, the Book of Mormon teaches, Nephi was shown that the revelation which John was given was easy to plain and easy to understand when it came forth from John. And after it went through the hands of the great and abominable church, which would be that, well, that it was changed and made very difficult to understand. And so we're going to get the one that's easy to understand that didn't go through the great church. Notice how important it is to have some pure records saved that have not been adulterated. By the way, that's, there's another whole subject here that some people are writing theses on now about how that's what the Book of Mormon is. It was taken out of Jerusalem before 600 BC. And before the fall of Jerusalem in 587 BC, it's taken out. They left 597 BC, I believe. This is my work. But it's before what are called the Deuteronomists, and a lot of people that did some rewriting and taking out things and changing things. And some people, Margaret Barker in England, and some people who follow her, have talked about a lot of the changes that have been made in the Bible where they didn't like certain doctrines and removed them. And so again, the Book of Mormon, we have the pure Old Testament before it got adulterated. And we haven't even really appreciated that until people have done enough scholarly things to find out how it has, some of it has been changed. Also, we have the Dead Sea Scrolls that show how some things have not been changed at all, like Isaiah. Nobody could doctor Isaiah to make it hard to understand because it already was, you know, and they didn't even know what to change. But why am I telling you all of that? Because we're going to get a pure version. In other words, this is not the Book of John. This is the same vision of, this is a sec, Ross. This is the same vision that John was given, but that vision was given to the three disciples, the three Nephites, and they're writing their version of the same vision. So it's an independent account. Russell, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm going to leave. But I also noticed that it's only, we only get one third of the revelations of John in this unsealed portion of the sealed portion. The other two thirds is in the part of, with Brother Jared's stuff.
Good point. And the same is true of Moses. This big book of Moses we had is only part of what was in the sealed book of Moses. Bye, Russell. Thank you for that. We've only got part of sealed Moses, and we're only going to get part of the revelation. Maybe we get all of Samuel's prophecies. We'll see. All righty. So, bye to Russell. So, again, he's just telling us that these books are coming. And but he's telling us when they're written, he's just filling in the history of when these things happened. That's what I understand. So maybe there's not too much to discuss. But it does point out that when we were caught up, so they are caught up in a heavenly vision, much like John was when they had the vision of the, that's the same as the revelation of John in the Bible. Okay, so we're to Valera. Any other comments before we, let's read verse 5. If Valera, are you there? Can you read that?
Yes, as soon as I pull in. I have someone else read. I'll read the next one. I'm almost home and I'm going to pull into the driveway.
I will read it. I haven't read yet.
Okay, thanks.
These records, which I am referring to, were written by me and my father on scrolls of hides, which I delivered into the hands of Mormon at the time we ministered to him and his son Moroni, so that Mormon would transcribe them on the plates that were being compiled and finally sealing its contents with all the other records required by the Lord for a wise future purpose in which we will return and minister together to the one who goes to read these records in the fullness of times. And my first comment, I'll jump right in with my own. I've heard Mauricio and others testify that the three Nephites have indeed appeared to Mauricio and to his wife and family. And I believe to all three of the witnesses, I'm not sure if they have to the patriarch or not. I think it's maybe not. I can't remember that. But they have ministered on more than one occasion to Mauricio, which is what is predicted here. Of course, somebody that thought this was fake wouldn't be impressed because they, you know, but I am because I know Mauricio. He's telling the truth and this prophecy has been fulfilled already. Okay, other comment, any comments, please?
I guess, John, you mentioned some of the other records that have been coming forward.
Speak louder. I have trouble.
John, you mentioned some of the other records that were from ancient peoples of this land. They also give accounts of these three Nephites visiting them that are very similar and supportive to what we're reading in the sealed book.
Thank you. So it's just going to be fun to have many witnesses and compare. And so at this point, you know, I try to do both. You read by the Spirit and try to feel what's true. But then I also do the scientific side, as you can tell from some of my comments, where you find different witnesses and the witnesses agree and they couldn't have known these things. Anyway, you know, there's a science side and there's a spiritual side. And we have two halves of our brain, right? The intuitive side and the logical side. And I believe that our brain and our mind is the same, I believe. The brain is just a material deal. But the mind is that way. And they're two witnesses of the truth. And the Lord's always working through two witnesses. And it's best when both witnesses, both halves of your brain agree. A lot of times they don't. You'll have a feeling to do something and your logic will say, no, that is stupid. Like going into a restroom, praising the Lord. Logical mind's not big on that one, you know? So anyway, testimony of two witnesses or more. Thank you. Other comments?
I have comment just on verse 4, that just the footnotes that were given on the number 4 footnote First Nephi 14, 18 through 27, but specifically verse 26, where in the Book of Mormon, it says that we're going to have other records that are sealed up. I can read that if you want.
Please.
And also others have been. To them he hath shown all things, and they have written them, and they are sealed up to come forth in their purity, according to the truth which is in the Lamb, in the own due time of the Lord, unto the house of Israel. So this is, you know, these are the three Nephites. They've seen all things. They're written them and sealed them up, and eventually we'll get them. So that's kind of cool. That's in the Book of Mormon.
And, you know, and sealed up, thank you, that's great. And sealed up can mean different things. The Dead Sea Scrolls, I believe, are definitely part of what's been prophesied here. And they were sealed up in these jars, airtight, which stopped them from deteriorating so much. And I'm not sure all the jars were sealed, but several, I believe, were just sealed, meaning plugged up so they don't oxidize. So anyway, I'm just saying there's different ways to seal things too, and to come forth. And others have been put in mountains and hidden. I like where it says the word hide. We'd probably say leather scrolls. We use the word leather, but that's a really specific word, and it doesn't, I think hide is the better word there. That's what they were written on, the inside of these hides. Think how amazing this all is. They're writing their books on these hides. And then they give it to Mormon to transcribe onto these gold plates. See how everybody has a job. Mormon was this master, not only engraver, but a bridger of longer records, editor. And anyway, each one of us has different gifts that we can use to contribute to the kingdom.
John, just a quick comment there. You mentioned the Book of Samuel, and Samuel gave certain signs in preparation for the coming of the Lord. This is a theme in the seal book, and how people, some people got out of the way and they didn't pull little signs, but nevertheless, Nephi said the signs were fulfilled. And because of that, our faith grew stronger. And then here we have in this reference here, this verse, the promise that these books will come forward, the three parts of the seal book of Revelations of John and this book of Samuel. So those who are faithful, and I'm thinking about the story that was told last night of how the children of Israel had to step into the water to show action. They knew these things, they showed action to step into water, and then the Lord stepped forward. It could be that these are milestones, and that when these records come forth, it will be part of the confirmation that's built in within these records to prove their truthfulness.
Thank you. Good point. And it is true that when the signs are fulfilled that are prophesied, especially that a lot of people are skeptical of it, clearly it builds faith. We're not to build our faith totally on signs or anything, but as Hugh Nibley said, they're gratifying confirmation for the believer. And that's all they are supposed to be. But amen, thank you. And let me comment on your comment about, and we only have a few more minutes and we finish this chapter. I think it's good not to always go over time, but there's a couple more things that can be said. I want to emphasize two points that Mauricio made last night as he gave his teaching from the sealed book. He gives these teachings, and his are powerful teachings. And he reviewed in chapter 3 of the sealed book of Moses when they came up to the Red Sea. And we always just sort of picture, you know, we just picture Moses as the prophet. And yes, we've all, I think a lot of us who have read any details know that it was kind of a box canyon, and the Egyptians thought they were so stupid, and they themselves thought they were stupid. Because now they've come up against a sea, and there's walls on both sides, and the Egyptian army with chariots and swords and everything behind them. It looked really bleak. And we just sort of assume that, well, yeah, Moses is the prophet, and he can take care of this. But we got he went over the details yesterday of the sealed book is always saying that the secret is to have the good feelings and the love and the peace and being one with God and not having fear. And he points out that this was a huge crowd. They're talking about 1 million people in the whole group. And they're all terrified, and they've lost their faith, and we're all going to die, and why did we leave for, and all this negative stuff. Just think of, you know, there's vibrations, spiritual vibrations going out. You got 1 million of these bad vibrations going out, and the Lord's counting on one man, and it says he had to hold it together for himself. He had to not be influenced by all of that, and to have the faith and the peace and the belief and the trust and remember all the miracles of Egypt, and God can do anything. And I don't think he knew ahead what was going to happen, but he had the faith and trust. Anyway, it just showed the rest of the story, and suddenly you realize how important these peaceful feelings are and how it's amazing that Moses pulled it off. He didn't say this, but the impression was if he couldn't have done that, he couldn't have done the miracle, because that is, we've been told all through this book, that's how the priesthood works. So the Lord picked a man who could do that and did. And we just, until that talk yesterday, I just sort of always thought, well, of course, he's the Lord's prophet. He held up the stick and everything's fine. And no, it's not all fine. That was the miracle to me now, is that Moses held it all together. Now that's amazing. And then he made another point that I was going to share, which doesn't come to me right now. But anyway, they were just, some of that's worth recording on this, because it may not have been recorded otherwise, especially in English. So any other comments? I really enjoy getting all these inside details of the background of these miracles and when things were written and where they went. Next time we will go into Paul and that in the next chapter. Still trying to remember that other point of Mauricio's yesterday, but oh yeah, the water, that's what Bill said. And so he points out, and I think this is in the Bible, I know I've thought of it before, the water doesn't, it's not that he's up there and the water all opens and everybody jumps in. There's something where they needed to start walking into the water and then it opened. And the same thing happened across the River Jordan. The priests had the Ark of the Covenant, and they're stepping, and they step into the water, not knowing what's going to happen. And then it opens up, and they can cross. And word of that all gets out to their enemies. That's why their enemies freak out that, oh no, this war is going to be different. This is than other wars. There's their God open the river for them, and you know, so the miracle sometimes isn't just for the believers, but also for the non-believers. Maybe not to be converted, but to recognize the hand of God. The scriptures say that when God reveals his mighty arm in the last days, all the world will know that he is God. Okay, if there's nothing else, we'll stop this recording and continue on with other things after. Any other comments before we close this lesson? Okay, I'm going to do